Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. What do employers need to know about COVID regulations for ag labor? I'm talking with Rudy Mendoza, the Executive Director of California Ag Labor Association, about that today. Rudy, can you tell us the latest on the COVID requirements?
There's been a lot of talk about extending the COVID restrictions, or the minimum, what they call the ETS, Emergency Temporary Standards. And so those actually will be extended until late 2021. And so I'll just hit some of the highlights, but face coverings, fully vaccinated workers without any COVID-19 symptoms do not need to wear face coverings in a room where everyone else is fully vaccinated and not showing symptoms. However, fully vaccinated and unvaccinated workers without symptoms do not need to wear a face covering outdoors, except when working at outdoor mega events with over 10,000 attendees. So in reality, we're not going to have that issue here in our labor force, but part of what we've been talking about since the very beginning is self-accountability. If you know that your employees are going to be out in some of these mega events, or they're going to be traveling now that things are opening up, it's not a bad idea to remind them to wear these coverings if they're going to be out at Disneyland or in places where there's going to be a lot of people. With regards to unvaccinated workers, starting July 31st of this year, all employees who are not fully vaccinated must be provided a NIOSH-approved respirator, and it's voluntary use only, like an N95. So the requirement, from what we understand, is receiving a lot of pushback, particularly because the N95 masks are expensive and they're still difficult to find in mass quantities. But as an employer, you still need to provide those masks, whether or not they decide to use them or not. Physical distancing, again, when the revised standards take effect, employers can eliminate physical distancing and partitions or barriers for employees working indoors and outdoor mega events if they provide respirators such as the N95s. Again, we're not gonna run into the situation where we have 10,000 people or a mega event, but it's not a bad idea to continue to provide that equipment for their use. Regarding any exclusions from the workplace, fully vaccinated workers who do not have COVID-19 symptoms are no longer need to be excluded from the workplace after a close contact. And as far as any special protections for housing and transportation, again, special COVID-19 prevention measures that apply to employer-provided housing and transportation no longer apply if all occupants are fully vaccinated. So those are just some quick highlights, but our recommendation is that you talk with your attorneys. Here at CALA, we use the Saki Law Group, Mike Saki, and their group have done a wonderful job of keeping us informed, but those are some of the highlights. And again, those ETS restrictions, those emergency temporary restrictions, are being extended through the end of the year.
And that's a lot to go over. So basically, yes, keep in contact with your attorneys and make sure that you keep updated on the requirements pretty much. Is there anything else that you think we should be talking about in the realm of ag labor?
Well, there's a lot that we can talk about, and unfortunately we just don't have hours to sit here and do it. But what we want to make sure that folks understand is CALA is here to help you. While you might be excellent at growing fruit or packing fruit or harvesting fruit, our job is to be here to support you with all of the regulatory compliance issues that you can think of. If our organization can work with you, we can help you mitigate the risk, whether it's with training or education or compliance. We do a tremendous amount of compliance work. We audit in the field, and we make sure that we, in conjunction with you, hold your supervisory staff and your employees accountable for the things they need to be doing in the field. And so if anybody is interested, again, give us a call. We are at www.calaglabor.com, or you can reach us at the office at 559-372-2822. But there is a tremendous amount of work that needs to continue to be done in the field with regards to regulatory compliance. Unfortunately, it's communicating all the way down from the contractor to the supervisor, the foreman, to the employee, that we tend to run into issues with, because that information isn't always relayed back to them. So that's where we come in as part of the education component.
We'll have more with Rudy right after this. We'll be right back.
The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board. Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
I'm talking with Rudy Mendoza, the Executive Director of the California Ag Labor Association today. In addition to the COVID regulations, we talked about heat and ag employees. We'll have that full discussion for you in Tuesday's show, but here's a preview.
I do also want to stress that as part of the training, it's important to remind employees of how important it is to take care of yourself. You also have a vested interest as an employee, but the ability to take care of yourself starts with what you consume and what you drink throughout the day. So we want to see them drinking water. Drinks such as Gatorade are important, but water is key. Unfortunately, we still see a lot of employees that drink a lot of sodas or caffeine drinks, especially those drinks that are high in caffeine and sugar, such as Monster and Red Bull and Full Throttle. And we remind employees every day that, you know, those things tend to dehydrate you quicker. And while you may get a quick high, the drop on the way down is what's going to make you sick. So education is key.
Right. That is a very good point, to make sure that it's water that you're drinking. And those energy drinks can be very dangerous when you're out in the heat and working and maybe not realizing how dehydrated you get. From what I understand, too, when you are suffering from heat illness or dehydration, the early signs can be very easy to miss and very easy to ignore. And then you get into further trouble because you're not immediately taking some action on that. Is that why the reminders every hour to drink your water?
Well, that in conjunction with the supervisor actually monitoring. And again, part of the buddy system is so that if I'm working alongside my buddy, then we're monitoring each other. So it's a constant reminder that, you know, if I'm working with Joe and I know Joe, I've worked with him for a long time and I know his personality, but all of a sudden today he's maybe a little lethargic or he seems to be not walking quite straight and maybe complaining of headaches. And I know that those are symptoms that I need to either question him or alert my supervisor on. But one of the things that we do here at CALA is we provide supervisor training at least once a year for all of our supervisors. We provide them with all the training information and the resources, but sometimes we may even end up doing it twice a year or two or three times a year, depending on how often they want to take it. But it's going through the standard and talking about what to look for. But I also want to make sure that folks understand that if you have a labor crew out there, your foreman or at least somebody in that crew needs to be trained in CPR first aid. And that's actually a standard. The standard says that anytime you have a crew of 20 or more people, you have to have somebody in CPR first aid trained capacity. And so we're also qualified instructors here at CALA, and we provide that training, and we emphasize wholeheartedly heat illness prevention and the symptoms that are
Is there anything else that you think that we should be discussing as far as the heat goes and what growers or employers, need to know?
Well, the Cal OSHA requires that every employer have a written heat illness prevention procedure program or policy. And unfortunately, what happens is some employers, what they do is they will take a sample document off the internet and put it in a binder somewhere and think that they are now in compliance. Unfortunately, that is not the case. This policy needs to be very specific as to what an employer will do to prevent heat illness in the workplace. And if you do not have any training in this type of area, we would be happy to provide that to you. Again, the other part of it is what you have written as part of your procedures is what you should be following in the field as well. So if you have a 5 or 6 page document and you are not following any of the procedures that you have in this document, then you again will be in violation because you have something that doesn't go along with what you're actually doing in the field. So paying attention to policy and procedural documents is very important. We can tailor make something for your organization. We'd be happy to work with you in doing the training for your employees, whether it's your supervisors or your actual harvesters. But again, planning, training, water, shade, those are all things that are very important. And last but not least, I do want to remind folks that the imminent hazards besides folks just getting sick in the field, which is obviously very important to prevent, also includes receiving what could potentially be an OPU. And you never want to get an OPU. An OPU is an order prohibiting use. And why that's so significant is if an agent of the state comes out and finds that you're in violation of any of the heat illness prevention standards, then what they will do is they will potentially shut down the entire operation. So let's say, for example, you have 6 crews out everywhere in the valley working today, and this agent only happens upon 1 crew. That agent can issue an OPU, which means that the employer now has to shut down all operations across the company. And work will not be allowed to resume until the employer can demonstrate that the imminent hazards have been corrected. That does not include the monetary penalties that OSHA can also impart on the employer. But if you would like any more information on how to prevent heat illness and what you can do to have a better trained workforce, please give us a call at CALA. Our number is 559-372-2822.
Again, tune in Tuesday for this very important discussion in full. Our news brief is up next. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Here's your news brief for today. A national coalition is pressing for water supply infrastructure. Citing an acute and critical need magnified by another all-too-familiar drought, a national coalition representing thousands of Western farmers, ranchers, water providers, businesses, and communities urged Senate leaders this week to take action to address the shortcomings of aging water infrastructure. In the letter, the coalition said federal investment in a diversified water management portfolio that serves a broad range of water uses must be included as essential infrastructure in the next legislative package. The coalition includes more than 220 organizations from 15 states that collectively represent $120 billion in agricultural production, nearly one-third of all agricultural production in the country, and many of the local and regional public water agencies that supply water to more than 75 million urban, suburban, and rural residents. Dozens of California organizations were among those signing the letter. Much of the West is bracing for a long summer of heat, wildfires, and water worries. Gary Crawford has more.
Much of the West is well into a
very crippling drought that has been going on now for 2 years.
And according to Agriculture Department meteorologist Brad Rippey, it's likely to go on for a while longer. For those in the Southwest, the four corner states, Arizona, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, the southwestern monsoon usually cranks up sometime in July, so that's the next chance for any drought relief there.
But California, on the other hand, with its Mediterranean climate, does not expect any appreciable rainfall until we get into the winter wet season. That would take us into, say, at least October or November.
And so until then,
we are expecting a very difficult water supply and wildfire season in much of the West.
In fact, the fire season's already going full blast.
We have active wildfires in Arizona. The two biggest fires burning east of Phoenix have consumed well over 100,000 acres of vegetation.
Just a sign, he says, of things to come.
And this covers the time period from June 15th through the 21st. It does look like the vast majority of the country is going to be hot and on the dry side as we head into and beyond mid-June. The outlook for temperatures from June 15th through the 21st, especially hot across the northern plains, the upper Midwest, and the entire western United States. Also quite hot across Florida's peninsula. Temperatures will be on the cooler side, a little bit below normal, likely as you move toward the western and central Gulf Coast states, extending northward through the Appalachians and to the middle and northern Atlantic coast. Now, I mentioned in terms of precipitation, it looks like it's going to be a pretty dry forecast. Much of the country drier than normal. The wetness should be confined to areas along the Gulf Coast and along the and in the southern Atlantic states. So a generally hot, dry forecast, again, for much of the country as we move into mid-June.
Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Biden administration's Environmental Protection Agency plans to repeal and rewrite the definition of the Waters of the United States, or WOTUS, rule. The EPA announced Wednesday it will repeal the Trump-era Navigable Waters Protection Rule, which replaced the Obama-era Waters of the U.S. rule. EPA Administrator Michael Reagan states, the EPA and Department of the Army have determined that this rule is leading to significant environmental degradation. Despite numerous challenges last year, the sheep and wool industries found support and assistance through various USDA programs, Rod Bain reports.
2020. Enough said. And like several other segments of agriculture, the nation's sheep and wool industry also dealt with its share of challenges last year. Yet, as Peter Orwick of the American Sheep Industry Association explains, the various mission areas of the Agriculture Department provided needed support and assistance during that turbulent year. For instance, there was a double whammy of export impediments for an industry that has grown to rely on 50% of its market on exports.
China became a very large partner in that trade with us. That's where the vast majority of the textile equipment is, so they're a natural partner.
Yet trade disputes with China impacted the U.S. sheep industry earlier last year, an industry that then faced both international and domestic market disruptions due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
We actually ended up with about 5 million pounds of our 2019 wool that we were unable to sell because we didn't have that Asian export. The 2020 clip, the vast majority of that is still in storage.
Regarding wool exports, collaboration between the sheep industry and USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service strengthened opportunities in both existing and new markets.
We are the cooperator with Foreign Ag Service for wool exporting, and we use all three of the Foreign Ag Service programs to the greatest extent that we possibly can.
Meanwhile, USDA marketing assistance loans and loan deficiency payments for events such as the pandemic offer needed support to wool producers.
It has been a big help for these farmers and ranchers. They have some kind of basic support for the wool prices because most were unable to sell at any price.
Sheep producers in the West, meanwhile, had notable herd impacts due to worsening drought conditions, conditions that have only intensified in several areas during 2021. Those impacts include lack of available forage for sheep.
each of the drought programs provided by USDA, whether it's the NAP program, whether it's rainfall insurance, those have been critical to operations facing drought. The U.S. Forest Service helped to the degree that they could with any flexibility to help during the pandemic on grazing. But there were operations that had to come off permits early because of the feed basin being drought impacted.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
A coalition of agriculture groups and universities is calling on Congress and the Biden administration to increase funding for agricultural research. The group says an increase of $40 billion is needed for agricultural research. In separate letters to President Joe Biden and the House and Senate leadership, the groups say they strongly support a robust investment of at least that $40 billion for agricultural climate research, agricultural innovation, and agricultural research infrastructure in any comprehensive infrastructure package moving forward. The North American Meat Institute says California's Proposition 12 provides no benefit to consumers and increases breeding sow mortality according to the state's own proposed rule. The California Department of Food and Agriculture released the proposed rule, which was originally due in September of 2019. They released it late last month. The Meat Institute has filed a reply brief recently to its petition to the U.S. Supreme Court. Juliana Potts, the president and CEO of the Meat Institute, states the petition to challenge the law has the support of more than 20 states. The question is whether the U.S. Constitution permits California to extend its power beyond the borders by banning the sales of pork and veal products sold into California unless out-of-state farmers restructure their facilities to meet animal confinement standards dictated by California. That is our news brief for today. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
As we first told you about on Tuesday, the USDA announced $4 billion to strengthen food systems. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack gave comments yesterday and on Monday about the announcement. For those who missed it previously, here are his remarks.
You know, the recent cyber attack, along with the pandemic, have been recent reminders of the fragile nature of the food supply chain in the United States. Supply chain issues have arisen over the course of the last couple of years in a number of sectors of our economy, transportation, energy, manufacturing, to name just three. And President Biden is keenly aware of the impact that this less reliant supply chain has on business and consumers and people in this country, and he's leading an effort with the signing of the Executive Order 14017. To begin to address the variety of challenges we have relative to supply chain. Today I met along with a number of members of the cabinet to begin the process of looking at the development and formation of a supply chain disruption task force, a whole of government approach, if you will, looking at all of the issues relating to supply chains, including those involved with the food and ag system. I expect and anticipate over the course of the next several months that there'll be a number of convenings of stakeholders to do a deeper analysis of some of the challenges that we face and gain from them some wisdom and knowledge and direction as to how we might be able to strengthen the supply chain. I would say this challenge of the supply chain adds to a number of concerns that have arisen about our current food and ag system, a system where nearly 90% of farms fail to generate a majority of income for those who own and operate the farm, a system that is currently leading to significant productivity gains, but at the expense of an alarming rate of topsoil loss and soil health and water quality, a nutrition system that often provides food but can fail to provide adequate nourishment, and a system that has seen rapid consolidation and a lack of competition. And finally, a system that has lacked equity for socially disadvantaged producers and a fair shot for small and medium-sized producers. This leads me to believe that what we really need is a transformational change in order to build back better our food system and our ag system, one that is economically, environmentally, and nutritionally more resilient and fairer and more open. Today, we are announcing the first of a number of steps designed to address the current supply chain challenge and also to begin that transformational change. Over $4 billion to be invested in order to help build back the system better. This complements a nearly $1 billion investment that we announced last week in food purchases under our emergency food programs, launching an effort to provide more nutritious food to rural and remote areas and working with socially disadvantaged producers. The money we invest today will be invested in four main categories focused on production resiliency, processing resiliency, distribution and aggregation resiliency, and markets and consumer benefits. Let me briefly just explain what we intend to do with these resources and be glad to respond to questions. In the food production area, we hope to make this system more resilient by continuing to build on our efforts at attracting beginning farmers by providing transition assistance, significant transition assistance, as those who wish to transition to a more value-added proposition are able to do so without necessarily being economically penalized, and assistance as well for those who work on our farm fields and in our manufacturing and processing facilities. On the processing side, we hope to be able to provide resources to improve existing small and mid-sized processing facilities, be able to cope and manage with the current challenges that they face as a result of COVID. But we also want to take a look at creating a new opportunity for the federal government to partner with state and local governments to see whether or not there is a opportunity to expand with new processing facilities and capacity in order to make our system more resilient. In the food distribution and aggregation area, we look to be able to expand and increase the number of food hubs, particularly those that will operate in high poverty areas. We look to work with our food banks and those involved to develop cooperative agreements between food banks and producers so that we create additional market opportunities for small and mid-sized producers. And we hope to see an expansion of food banks in underserved areas. In the market area, we hope to increase the availability of access to healthy foods with these resources, including incentives to support food that that is generated and developed in a fair and healthy system. And finally, looking forward to an opportunity to expand capacity with the passage of the American Jobs Program and the American Families Program. We look to partner with the efforts that Congress eventually will pass with those two bills to amplify and to expand on our efforts. The resources for this $4 billion plus effort will come from a combination of COVID relief resources, the American Rescue Plan, and some of our traditional programming resources. Over the course of the next several months, we will be announcing specific elements of this, resources that will become available, and we will continue to build on this effort to transform our food system and our ag system so that it is more resilient, it's fairer, it's more open, more transparent, and provides greater resilience in all four of these critical areas.
Secretary Vilsack was also asked about funding for farm labor and if that would be a part of the $4 billion. Here's his response.
I had an opportunity to visit with several members of the Senate today about the opportunity to get Senate action on the Ag Modernization, Ag Worker Modernization Act, which would essentially create, I think, a much more stable labor pool, if you will, by providing a mechanism for those who are working here and have worked here permanently, legitimacy by providing additional H-2A visas, by simplifying that system. There's still work to be done, obviously, in the Senate to get the votes to pass that. It did pass the House in a bipartisan way. So I think it is important and necessary for the Senate to understand that part of the resiliency challenge we have is making sure that the workforce is stable and secure. And one way of doing that would be to address in the past the bill that the House passed. In the meantime, I think what I can do is make sure that folks understand the significance of this issue and the need for resolution. I think there are a lot of producers out there that are anxious about the workforce. And every single day and every single year, they deal with the same level of challenge and concern about it. So our hope is that that on the farm that we get the Ag Modernization Act through the process, which would certainly be very, very helpful to address the issue. And I think the other opportunity for us is to work collaboratively with the processing community to make sure that we provide the resources that will allow them to continue to provide the protections necessary in the face of COVID so that we don't have the kinds of disruptions that we saw early in the COVID situation.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. That's our show for today. If you'd like to send me some comments, you can email me, sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.